Angie has made it easier than ever to hire high-quality pros to get all your home service jobs done well. Just bring them your project online or with the Angie app, answer a few questions, and Angie will connect you with local pros who match your specific needs. Or book a service instantly at an upfront price. So join the millions of homeowners who use Angie to care for their homes and get your next home service job done well. Download the free Angie mobile app today or visit Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I.com. Angie has made it easier than ever to hire high-quality pros to get all your home service jobs done well. Just bring them your project online or with the Angie app, answer a few questions, and Angie will connect you with local pros who match your specific needs. Or book a service instantly at an upfront price. So join the millions of homeowners who use Angie to care for their homes and get your next home service job done well. Download the free Angie mobile app today or visit Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I.com.
And with that familiar theme song, it's once again time for the Steam Room podcast featuring Charles Barkley and yours truly, Ernie Johnson. We're going to do things a little differently this week because Thursday, June 4th, Inside the NBA returned to the air with me and Charles and Kenny and Shaq. And we had a chance to talk about where the NBA might be headed now that there are ideas about how the season can proceed. And conversation on where society's headed. And so we decided that this week, rather than just do the traditional Steam Room podcast the way we have been, we would just take what happened on Thursday night on Inside the NBA, all the conversations being held in that hour, and play that back for you. Hope that's okay. These are different times. And so today it demanded a different approach. Hope you enjoy it. This is Ernie Johnson coming to you from Braselton, Georgia, about 45 minutes north of the city of Atlanta. We do have some NBA news to talk about tonight in the next hour. It appears the league has a pathway to resume play. We'll get into that with Adam Silver, the commissioner. But we are living in a time now where what we need to speak about, conversations that are difficult but are necessary, because on this day, on this Thursday, George Floyd's memorial was held today in Minneapolis. This plague of racism, which comes at the same time as this pandemic, demands our attention. And we will do that over the next 60 minutes. Charles Barkley, Shaquille O'Neal, Kenny Smith. We have not been together on TNT since play was suspended by the NBA. I miss seeing you guys. It's good to see you even this way tonight. And I know that we all want to share what we are feeling inside at a time like this. And that's what we'll do as we start the show. And in no particular order, Kenny Smith, tell me what is in your heart and what's in your head right now.
Well, probably the first thing is George Floyd and his family. We want to send our condolences out to friends, family that are immediate with him. And also condolences to a community of people and a community of around the world who are going through this horrific time of the scab of racism being pulled off, the Band-Aid being pulled off and being obviously seen. For me, I'm a little bit distraught, and at the same time, I'm encouraged that everyone now sees what we have seen as an African-American young man from Queens, New York, have seen my whole life. I've been afforded some privileges because I've been a first-team All-American, I've been a college basketball All-American, Player of the Year, NBA champion, but at the core of that I've always been a Black American, a Black person. And I know what those difficulties have been And before I even get into maybe some solutions, I always realized, Ernie, I said, the reason that I was probably able to be as resilient as I probably have been is because I always had success. So success would always make me think, well, I don't have to deal with that then. I'm not going to deal with that because I'm moving on. I'm going to the University of North Carolina. I'm not going to worry about this guy. I'm going to worry about this Karen, so to speak, because I've had success. And when I got to the NBA, I had more success. So then I was like, oh, I'm not going to worry about that. That's happening to me because I'm having success. But imagine if you're 50, 55 years old and you didn't have the success I had and you had to deal with that. You were making $25,000, $30,000 a year. That's what you're seeing now. And I'm glad, in a way, that America is seeing close and upfront the systematic racism that has been apparent to us for a long time.
Charles Barkley.
Ernie, it's stressful being a black man. It's stressful being a black man. You know, I'm sitting at my house a month ago, and a young black man is out for a jog, and he gets shot and killed. Like, white folks don't have to deal with that every day. This kid is out for a jog, and his life is over. 2 weeks later, in New York City, a black man is bird watching. He asks politely to a white woman, please put your dog on a leash. She goes off on a tangent. I'm gonna call the police and say I'm harassed by a black man in the park. These are things that black people have to deal with. Now, let's get to Mr. Floyd. We're all at our house, minding our own business. And you turn on the television and you see a cop who has his foot, his knee on a man's neck for 8 minutes and 42 seconds. You're minding your own business. These are three examples of people who were harassed and killed for no other reason than the fact that they were black. That's it, Ernie. They were black. These people were trying to live their life in a positive way, and two of them got killed just for being black. One got harassed for being black, and you just get sick and tired. Like we're still dealing. I mean, think about this. We're trying to deal with the pandemic, which has had a horrific effect on black people in general. But now you factor in people trying to fight the pandemic, mind their own business. Two of them ended up dead, and one gets harassed on camera. It's just tiring being black all the time because it's something all the time. You never get to relax.
Now, Shaq, go ahead.
You know, I like to quotes, and one of my favorite quotes is by Malcolm X. You can't separate peace from freedom because no one can be at peace until he or she has freedom. This is all we've been asking for 401 years, freedom, equal rights. And a lot of times it's been pushed under the rug. And, you know, what's been happening in the past 6 months has already been, actually 5 months, not even 6 months yet, has already been horrific. You got 40 million people out of jobs, a pandemic, a virus that came out of nowhere, the loss of Kobe. Charles mentioned the young brother that was jogging, and then Floyd. Talked to a lot of police officers, my good friend Art Acevedo out of Houston, who, by the way, did a great job of, you know, bringing the city together. That technique is not a technique that they teach in any academy. And, you know, the other guys, one of the guys, because, you know, we always talk about good cops, bad cops. A good cop is one that can tell his brother, hey, that's not the right technique. A good cop is the one that can say, don't write that down on the form. It's not true. We don't want to get charged with perjury. I've never seen that. A guy have his knee on another man's neck for 8 minutes. I was impressed that, everybody came together. This is the first time that I've seen riots that were meant for us. You had a lot of white people there. I was around, the Rodney King, and it only happened in L.A. But as I'm watching the news now, Paris, Newark, New Jersey, New York, Minnesota. And as Kenny said previously, people are finally seeing what we've been seeing all our life. I'm from the projects of Newark, New Jersey. I've seen it. I've seen it in San Antonio amongst, Latinos also. I've seen it in Baton Rouge. This is something that we see all the time. And it's 2020. You would think in 2020, things would have started to get better. But, as I'm talking to some old timers, this is how they used to feel back in the 50s and the 60s. And, everybody's just tired. You got people that's been quarantined in the house. You got 40 million people out of jobs, mostly, African-American people. People are just tired. People are just frustrated. People are upset. And they have a right to be. And there was a lot of protesting. There was a lot of looting. There's a lot of people complaining about people looting. You have to understand what these people are feeling. And to the people that, control the system, I think, one way to start to deplete systematic racism is you have to listen. You have to listen to how we feel. You don't know how we feel. You don't know how it is to, when you get pulled over, what's going to happen to you. I saw a video the other day, and I see a lot of videos like this. It was a white gentleman, and the cops, they were touching him up. They had the batons, they were touching him up. And, they pull him out the car, get him to the ground, touching him up. He gets up, he takes the baton, hits one cop in the head, hits another cop. Then he gets in that car and drive off. Now, if you have to ask the question, if that was a black guy, what would happen? Is something wrong with the system? We already know if he was a black guy, what would happen? We're all on social media. I saw a picture on social media. It was four young brothers at the top. And they all have all been arrested. And they were all beat up. And it said, no murders. Then you had two white guys on the bottom who killed 30 people. They had the prettiest mugshots ever. So if you have to ask the question what's going on, then, obviously you're not paying attention. Once everybody, especially the people that are in control, start listening and paying attention, I think we can make a change.
Let me ask you guys to react to the story that over the last 24 hours involving Drew Brees drew all kind of reaction, and Drew Brees having to issue an apology when he was asked on the air about standing or kneeling for the national anthem, going back to Colin Kaepernick. And this was his answer.
I will never agree with anybody disrespecting the flag of the United States of America or our country. Let me just tell you what I see or what I feel when the national anthem is played and when I look at the flag of the United States. I envision my two grandfathers who fought for this country during World War II, one in the Army and one in the Marine Corps, both risking their lives to protect our country and to try to make our country and this world a better place. So every time I stand with my hand over my heart, looking at that flag and singing the national anthem, that's what I think about. And in many cases, it brings me to tears, thinking about all that has been sacrificed, not just those in the military, but for that matter, those throughout the civil rights movements of the 60s, and everyone and all that has been endured by so many people up until this point. And is everything right with our country right now? No, it's not. We still have a long way to go. But I think what you do by standing there and showing respect to the flag with your hand over your heart is it shows unity. It shows that we are all in this together. We can all do better, and that we are all part of the solution.
The Saints quarterback's comments drew intense reaction, including this from LeBron James. is it still surprising at this point? Sure isn't. You literally still don't understand why Cap was kneeling on one knee. Has absolutely nothing to do with the disrespect of the flag and our soldiers, men and women, who keep our land free. My father-in-law was one of those men who fought as well for this country. I asked him questions about it and thank him all the time for his commitment. He never found Cap peaceful protest offensive because he and I both know what's right is right and what's wrong is wrong. God bless you. After the reaction, Drew Brees issued this apology. I'd like to apologize to my friends, teammates, the city of New Orleans, the black community, NFL community, and anyone I hurt with my comments yesterday. In speaking with some of you, it breaks my heart to know the pain I've caused. I stand with the black community in the fight against systemic racial injustice and police brutality and support the creation of real policy change that will make a difference. I'm sick about the way my comments were perceived yesterday, but I take full responsibility and accountability. I recognize that I should do less talking and more listening. What'd you think, Chuck?
Well, it was a very interesting day for me as a guy who's a talking head on television, who's not on television. Drew's original statement, I thought, was insensitive. It was very insensitive, especially during this time. But I thought the negative reaction from every talking head on television and some of his teammates was overkill. I've never heard a bad word about Drew Brees in my life. He made a mistake. But we've gotten to the point in society where everybody on social media thinks they are God, judge, and jury. Drew Brees made a mistake. But I watched very closely today because I want to come on TV because I didn't know you were going to ask that question. But just in case you did, hey, Drew Brees was wrong in his initial statement. But the level of vitriol, anger, and things like that, I thought was overkill. Drew Brees, whatever he said, I thought he talked about, hey, the flag means different things to different people. But I thought the way he was portrayed on television and radio today was not fair at all. Drew Brees has done some amazing things in New Orleans and his life. I'm not even talking about football. He made a mistake in a statement. But this level of we've got to kill everybody who says something we don't agree with, I'm never going to go with the mob. I want to make it clear. I did not like what he said right away. But the vitriol and animosity and hatred he just got for the last 24 hours, I thought it was overkill.
So about 2 weeks ago, I was contacted to speak to the Saints players today. So my speech was about team and unity or something else. Then this happened. So I'm not going to get into it because Coach Payton doesn't really want us to get into it. But I was on the call today when Drew apologized to his teammates. And most of his teammates accepted his apology. They said, Drew, we know your character. We knew you stepped in some stuff that you can't get out of. But guess what? We want you to do more positive things and less talking. And they all said, we accept your apology. I agree with Chuck. He made a mistake. I always talk about my favorite picture in the civil rights movement. It's when Muhammad Ali, Kareem, and all the guys were sitting down in suits and they were making the points known. Kenny, me, you, and Charles, and you know all the other African-American people, we know that. Of course, when you kneel during the national anthem, we can say it's not about the flag. But if you get people to say that for you, then they missed a point. See, the way Muhammad Ali and them did it, you can't miss the point. We're sitting down in the suit. You got all the top players, Bill Russell, and we're telling you that. And Charles, I agree with you. The flag means different stuff to a lot of people. My father was a military man, and you guys know my father. We don't mess around with the flag. But I also understand Cap's point. It's not about the flag. I'm just bringing attention to something that's been going on for 401 years. So again, you know, I understand all people's point, and I think we people just need to listen before we react all the time. And I agree with you, Chuck. I know Drew Brees. He's not a racist. You know, he said what he said. The timing was terrible. He made a mistake. But I was on the call today when he apologized to his friends. And my good friend, who's from my hometown, Newark, New Jersey, Malcolm Jenkins, was the first one to say, brother, I accept your apology. So, you know, Drew Brees does a lot in the city of New Orleans. Look, he made a mistake. The timing was bad. And again, a lot of time when, you know, we make our points, we need to focus on making our points to where it cannot be interrupted. See, if you allow other people to throw interruptions in your point, then you know, they could, you know, cause drama in the point that you're trying to make. So, again, I understand everything. I'm a black man. I've been black all my life. I'm going to die black. I see what's going on. I understand what's going on. However, I am old enough to be able to sit back and listen and understand that your point of view is your point of view, and my point of view is my point of view. As long as we respect each other as men and women, we can move on. So, I also spoke with Drew. He apologized. I accept his apology. Look, everybody makes mistakes. A lot of these people on social media, I agree with you, Chuck, they think they're holier than thou. Nobody is holier than thou. We all make mistakes. We all say stuff, you know, out of the heat of the moment. But, you know, the question is, where do we go from here? And that's what I, you know, posed to the Saints today. Where do we go from here?
Kenny, I'll get to you in 1 second. Let me weigh in on this as we're just because of where we are in the discussion. And as you point out, Shaq, you talk about the military background in your family. And, you know, I have that too. And a dad who's a Marine, who was a Marine. And I can see the flag at my mother's house now, the flag that they folded at his funeral and handed to her. And I see that every time I go to the house. Here's the situation. You can fly the flag at your house. You can salute the flag. You can revere the flag. You can respect the flag. And all of those are fine. What you cannot do is use the flag as a blindfold. You can't use the flag as a blindfold and not see the things you've seen with your very eyes that tell you that what's keeping this country held back is this systemic racism. When you see these things happen, you can't be blinded by that. And it's said often, you know, my country right or wrong. But I think that needs to change to my country right our wrongs, because the wrongs are there, and it's up to us to take the initiative and be intentional. And for us to say, I'm going to be uncomfortable. I am going to listen to somebody I normally wouldn't listen to. I'm going to read something I normally wouldn't read. And I'll tell you something. I didn't know anything about Killer Mike till last Friday. And now I'll never forget him because of what he said and what I learned. That's what I have to do. I've got to have open ears, open eyes, and an open heart to hear voices that I wouldn't normally hear and help me understand. Kenny.
I have a slightly different viewpoint. I was very offended by what he said yesterday, or day before yesterday. I was very offended. I looked at it as the definition of what we call white privilege, because he has a systematic, here's a systematic holdback, and you're only looking at it from your point of view, and then only that you're intaking it. So you're not looking at it from the other ethnic race. That is exactly. It made it worse that it was Drew Brees, someone who we cheer for, that someone we cheer for who has teammates like us that didn't get us, someone who's in the locker room every day. He doesn't have the same excuse that some other people may have had. I've always said the first time I've hugged a person of another race was in a basketball game. So he doesn't have the excuse that some people have. So you would think that he would be more educated to the sensitivities of everyone else. Someone we cheered for is using his white privilege to say he couldn't understand what we were going through at that moment. That was very offensive for me. His apology, I just see for the first time, I have to soak that in, but I was offended. And that is the definition of it. For me, that's how I felt. And I still feel that way. I do. And Ernie, I think there are some certain solutions. You know, that's the kind of like the same way someone asks a lot of times, like, what can I do now? And, you know, it's not my job to educate Drew Brees on what it is, because your wife, Ernie, Cheryl, she's a great woman, right? Because I say she's a great woman because of this. Because when there was a human trafficking need, she went out and said, I'm going to stop human trafficking. And she started the coalition and they did it. Drew Brees doesn't have to ask me what should he do. If he felt, if you want to help cure human trafficking, you go research it, you figure it out, you be sensitive to it, you be empathetic to it, and you put your money and your time where your mouth is. Then I will believe. I have a lot of friends of all ethnic backgrounds, but I don't want to hear the question like, what should I do? Like, you don't have that same question when you're talking about kids in need or someone else. Figure it out. Go help. You see someone on the street, you don't go, what can you do to help? What can I do to help you? You say, here's this to help you. You figured it out. That's not my job. That's too much of a burden on me to help Drew Brees and all of that. So I was very offended, unfortunately. And I will process his apology because this is the first time I've heard it. So I will process it.
Hold on. See, this is where I got to step in, Ernie. Because, see, this is what I hate when the message gets muddled. First of all, me and Shaq are not defending Drew Brees. He was wrong. But my question is, less than 1% of the brothers kneel for the anthem. We didn't say, oh, you don't get it. So all of a sudden, Drew Brees says, he said, I'm going to respect the anthem. Oh, he's racist. He's a bad guy. We didn't say the same BS about all the other brothers who stood up for the anthem. That's the only point I'm trying to make. Hey, I'm not going to defend Drew Brees, but I'm not going to call him a racist because he stands for the national anthem. 99% of the brothers stood up for the anthem.
I didn't call him a racist, Charles. Yeah, I didn't call him a racist.
I'm just talking about all the – no, hold on, Kenny. First of all, I didn't say you did. I'm talking about all the fools and idiots on TV today. Drew Brees said what he said. Me and Shaq admitted we don't agree. We think he was wrong. But these guys are talking about he's a racist. All these fools who got Twitter and whatever. I'm like, wait a minute. So y'all are really saying every brother, which is 99.9% of them, did not kneel. Cap, Eric Reed, the linebacker stood. But the rest of the brothers didn't stand. That's the only point I'm trying to make. That's the only point I wanted to make.
I got you, Charles. And we have to... because we have limited time and we have other voices we need to hear, we need to take a break. Adam Silver, Commissioner of the NBA, on the other side. And here on Inside the NBA, we are joined now by the Commissioner of the NBA, Adam Silver. Adam, before we get into a possible return to play for the first time since March 11th or so, a lot of your players have been front and center in recent days. Tell me your thoughts as you put all of this into perspective and you see how many of your players have taken an active role.
Well, let me begin by saying I've been listening to you guys, you know, for the last half hour or so, and a lot of the points have struck home with me. One of them is, you know, I'd say to Kenny, Charles, and Shaq, I think I've known you all of you, for some of you close to 30 years, you know, others almost as long. And it's you can't walk in another man's shoes. And I'd say, you know, you've all made the point about listening, and I think this is a wake-up call for the country. Because we had, for example, a community conversation at the NBA yesterday with almost 1,000 people. And many of my colleagues, African-American colleagues, were telling stories that people I work with every day and people I thought I knew what was going on in their lives, and people telling stories about having guns pulled on them, you know, when they were innocently going about doing their business, or the way they feel they were discriminated against in a certain situation. And I think you guys hit the core of it. I mean, there are no doubt law enforcement issues, but ultimately this is about race and racism in America. And I think what also has struck me is that we are such a unique institution, one that all of you, of course, are part of, that I think ultimately may be in a position to have more of an impact on this issue than almost any other organization in the world. I mean, when you think about among the players, coaches, former players like you guys, you know, who are including our ownership now, within that group you have some of the most well-known people of color in the entire world. And I think, you know, I've had this conversation with Michelle Roberts just today, who of course runs our Players Association, who is also African-American, and saying, let's collectively put our heads together. And I mean, Michelle was the first to say, yeah, but this just can't be more of the same. This isn't about another joint statement from the league and its players. This is a moment in time. And part of my hesitation has been, I don't have any answers. I mean, I think as Shaq said and all of you said, this is about listening at this moment. But so I don't think it's about coming up with something tomorrow. But fairly quickly, I think we need to come together and think about ways that this institution can have an impact on our greater society. And as I said, we had a Board of Governors meeting, our owners meeting today to talk about restarting the season. But we ended up spending the first hour just talking about these issues and why people got involved in the NBA and how we, again, can uniquely potentially have an impact on these issues. So I just lastly say I've been incredibly proud of our organization. And again, you know, we use that expression, the NBA family, but I mean it broadly, just listening to you guys over the last half hour. And, you know, whether it's retired players like Steven Jackson or, you know, current players who are speaking out on these issues. And I think just, of course, I've been listening to the back and forth just now. And I think even on these issues, it's never going to be the case we're all going to agree. But I also think one of the values of the NBA has always been tolerance. So I also think we have to be willing to listen to each other and even accept that we're not always going to agree on what the solutions are. And occasionally people are going to unintentionally say something that has a different meaning to other people. And that's one of the things we're all learning now as well.
Yeah. As your Board of Governors meeting continued today, you did have approval of a plan that you see as getting the NBA back to play on July 31st. Take me through the crux of this and what still needs to be done, Adam, before we can say, not only is this the plan, this is what's going to happen.
Let me begin by saying it seems somewhat small, you know, to be talking about return to playing basketball in the context of what you guys are talking about. But I mean, that we have been working. I mean, I think when we all talked shortly after we shut down the season, and of course, we've always been looking for whether or not there is an appropriate and safe way in which we can resume basketball, and knowing that we're going to be living with this virus for a while. And I think just as other industries, other businesses are looking to find their way, I think we've been exploring together with the players whether there, in essence, can be a new normal here. And so what we've come up with now is playing without fans for the time being, at a single site, and that would be in Orlando, Florida, at Disney Wild World of Sports Complex. We had extensive discussions, again, with our teams and the players about what the format should be, and ultimately we concluded the fairest way to do this would be to take the 16 teams that, as of March 11th, would have qualified, 8 in the West, 8 in the East, for the playoffs, but then to take what we're calling the 6 other bubble teams, and that is, and it turns out it's 5 teams in the West and 1 team in the East, and those are the teams that were within 6 games of the 8th seed. And then we would begin playing by having what we're calling seeding games, and that is games to determine who ultimately should be the top 8 in the West and the top 8 in the East. And it will also give the players an opportunity after training camp to play not quite regular season games, but meaningful games before they go right into the playoffs. And then once the playoffs start, and this was a point made by Michael Jordan, you know, whose team, the Charlotte Hornets, are not one of the 22 teams, but he's clearly the most respected voice in the room when it comes to basketball. He felt it was very important that after we established the 16 teams, we not be gimmicky, because there were a lot of proposals on the table to do unique tournaments and pool play like you see in international competition. And we took many of those proposals very seriously. But I think ultimately, and I agreed with Michael, that there's so much chaos in the world right now. I mean, even before the racial unrest we're experiencing now, that let's come as close to normal as we can. And as close to normal as we can is top 8 in the West, top 8 in the East, playing 4 rounds of 7 games. So then that's what we intend to do, and our goal is to crown a champion.
Well, Adam, let me ask you this question about fairness. There's a couple questions I need to ask you. Nurkic, Zach Collins for Portland, Kevin Durant, and Kyrie Irving for the New Jersey Nets. It wouldn't be fair if those guys came on either one of those teams, because if the season had ended, those players probably would not have been back, or maybe been back. Are they going to be able to play in this the rest of the season? Because I'm not sure that's fair if you're playing a New Jersey team that's going to get Kyrie and Kevin Durant back, or a Portland team, if they get Nurkic and Zach Collins back, that changes the whole dynamic. Is that fair, or are you going to allow it?
We're going to allow it, and I'd only say, Charles, and this has been the back and forth with our teams, there's so much here that's not fair, and I think we were choosing among multiple bad alternatives, given the pandemic we're dealing with, and I think that many of the teams that weren't able to resume play, those 8 teams that are not included, thought it was unfair, and I think there were also some of the teams that are already, in essence, had mathematically made the playoffs, said it's unfair to give some of these 6 teams an opportunity to play in. And I think ultimately, to the extent a team has a healthy roster and those players are able to come back, they are eligible to play.
Adam, you were at the forefront of caring about the players, being at the forefront of safety of the individuals, and saying, I'm no questions asked, I'm going to cancel the season. What did it take for you guys to come back and say, you know what, even though this is not really handled 100% like we would want it to do, I know we want to crown the champion. What was your thought process and said, okay, we're going to wait a couple more weeks and we're going to go July 31st to start the season and bring it to October? And was that a hard process for you?
It's been a very difficult process. And I should say, too, one of the sort of to mix sporting metaphors, I would say, you know, we got a long way to go here. We're really in the equivalent of the first inning. I mean, the first step was to agree on a format among the 30 teams. We've had extensive discussions with the Players Association, but we haven't finished those negotiations. And they're obviously our partners here, and so they have to agree to every aspect of this format. So those discussions are ongoing. We have issues to work out with Disney in terms of playing with Orlando. But even when all those steps are completed, I think we're, you know, there's constant changes in terms of what we're learning about this virus. You know, we're studying every day the caseload in Orange County, in Florida, you know, whether or not antivirals or vaccines come sooner than anyone expected could impact whether fans come in or not. So I think that obviously the most significant changes from when we shut down are we're playing without fans. You know, we're playing in a central location. We're going to play on a campus where, in essence, the players are going to live and remain there throughout the competition. Everyone's going to be tested. We're working through the logistics with the players, but most likely daily. And even though the players will be tested on a daily basis and the other participants, other than the time when the players are face-to-face on the court, and an odd thing to do in the time of a virus, the other times will be remaining or retaining certain social distancing protocols. And I think one of the things we know, we've learned a lot more about the virus since we shut down in March. And the data is demonstrating that, for the most part, there are exceptions, that healthy young people are the least vulnerable. But there are also people involved in this league, particularly some of the coaches, who are obviously older people. And we also know people at any age who have underlying conditions are more vulnerable. So we're going to have to work through protocols. And it may be, for example, certain coaches may not be able to be the bench coach. They may have to retain social distancing protocols, and maybe they can be in the front of a room, a locker room or a ballroom with a whiteboard. But when it comes to actual play, you know, we're not going to want them that close to players in order to protect them. So those are all issues we're continuing to work through.
Adam, well, thank you. I want to kind of go back into a little bit into the social issues and ask you a question. Actually, a request as well. But before I do that, I just want to shout out guys like CP3, Kyrie Irving, LeBron, Trae Young, D-Wade, guys who always step up, and Carmelo at the forefront, and they have their voices heard. So just shout out to those guys. But, you know, I think this is also a time, you know, I asked my kids, Adam, I said, if you could sit in front of the President of the United States and ask for three things, what would they be? And, you know, so here's a couple that I think, because we're the NBA is the largest conglomerate of African-American men that make the most money in the country, I think it's important that our voice is different from everyone else's. And so for me, I would say the two things that we really would see if we could do and voice our voice is, one, is have an independent board of prosecutors for police officers. I think right now, prosecutors today, they prosecute with police officers. They work hand in hand on a daily basis. They usually call police officers in to be expert witnesses in cases, so it's very difficult. You can't referee the game you're playing. I think that's very difficult or impossible, as we've seen. I think the second part would be let police. So meaning if my partner does something and I'm in the car with you, you're liable for that the same way we were asking for the other three officers to be arrested. Because it's important, I could go to my partner and I'm a good cop, I could go, I'm trying to go home tonight. Do not do that. And I asked my 12-year-old son, Malou, I said, what would you have done if you knew you would get in trouble for having a knee in a guy's neck? He said, I would have tackled him. And so it's just an easy logic, you know. And Adam, we've had the war on drugs when I grew up, you know, which was about the production and distribution and consumption of drugs and war against it. To me, it's a war on racism, about the production, the distribution and consumption of racism, that as a unity of the NBA, we can be in lead and forefront.
I'm sorry, is the question, do I agree?
Well, I think that's where, I think earlier you said, well, what?
I definitely agree with that. I think that, you know, when I think about who we are, the resources that we have available to us, the footprint of this league, the quality of the, you named a group of players, the list, we could go on, and then plus you guys and, you know, people like Michael Jordan in ownership, I think we could have enormous impact on society. And again, I think because we're not a political organization, but we're an organization steeped in values and things I've talked about, you know, many times that go way back before me, before David Stern, you know, Bill Russell, who's incredibly, you know, our Babe Ruth is still around. And he tells the stories of, you know, standing on the steps of the Lincoln Memorial when Martin Luther King delivered his I Have a Dream speech. And I'm sure, you know, when he's looking out all these years later at issues we're still dealing with in America, I think I have the same response to all of you guys. And similar to what Michelle Roberts said to me earlier today, like, this is not about just another statement from the league or another program we announced. And I'd only say I'm in listening mode. I don't have an easy answer. And I think that part of what we all recognize is this, you know, is not obviously just an issue for African-Americans in this country. This is an issue for all of us. This is a human issue. And I think it therefore requires, you know, all of our attention, all of our resources to solving it.
Adam, if a player tests positive for the virus in the middle of the playoffs, do you have to take the entire team out and they have to sacrifice a series?
The answer is we don't believe we would need to. You know, we've been dealing with a group of our experts plus public health authorities down in Florida now. And the view is that if we were testing every day and we're able to trace, in essence, the contacts that player has had, we're able to, in essence, contain that player, you know, and separate him from his team. And we're continuing to test every day. The belief is we would not have to shut down if a single player tested positive.
Thank you for that answer, Adam. Thank you for the question, Charles. It needed to be asked. Thanks for being so gracious with your time, Commissioner. And we will see you soon. And hopefully we will see you with a resumption of play in July. Thanks.
Thanks, guys.
Among those at George Floyd's memorial today, Stephen Jackson, who is here, as is Mark Cuban. Stephen, this was your friend they memorialized today. What are your thoughts hours later?
One down, two more to go. They did a great job. I think it was beautiful. A lot of people showed up in honor of my brother. Houston's going to be totally different, though. You know, that's where all the love is. That's where everybody that knew him best is. And that's where the heart is. He was the heart of Third Ward, the heart of Houston, Texas. And I think that's the one that I'm really looking forward to. But the ceremony today was great.
Mark, you have been vocal in watching this situation. Did you call it a white problem the other day? Is that what I saw? Was that an accurate description?
I mean, it's not something black people have to change. I mean, it's something we have to change. It's our perceptions. It's how we understand the black community. How we understand how all ethnic community. The problem is ours, not a problem of the black community.
Go ahead, Shaq.
Jackson, I've been knowing you for a while. I know you're very passionate. I know you're hurting right now. I want to commend you at being on the forefront of bringing justice to a problem that's been going on a long time. And I just want to say I'm proud of you, brother. I remember when I first saw the post when you said twin. When I saw the video of him and I saw a twin, I was like, I didn't know he had a twin brother. And then as I kept seeing all the love that, you know, the guys from Houston showed us, the community had been at the forefront. I also want to tell you, let his daughter and his baby mama know if they need anything from Uncle Jack, I'll be there for them. They're going to politicize what I do. But you got my number. If they need anything, you just call me.
Thank you, big bro. I appreciate it, Shaq, and the family say thank you as well.
You know, I'm going to ask Mark this as number one, as a friend of mine, and I appreciate you, brother, for being there for me all the time. But as a white man, I know as a black man, when I watched that tape and they got his knee on this dude for 8 minutes and 42 seconds, like every black person like, yo, man, this is not right. As a white person, what exactly are you feeling when you're watching this video?
I was just sick to my stomach. I mean, I watched the first time all the way through, and so when I first saw him standing up, my first thought was, what did he do wrong? Right, which just shows you where I'm coming from and part of what we need to change. But once he got down to the ground and got to the point where he had his neck on him, it was just sickening. I mean, it was stomach turning.
Stephen, you know, first, my condolences to you, being a close friend to George Floyd. And so my condolences out to you, because I know that is a very difficult time. And then you have to, you're revisiting it much differently than we are and processing it much differently. So my condolences, firstly. Secondly, I would ask you, what systematic change that you would feel would be something that you would ask for if you can go to government, to Mark Cuban, who's a billionaire, to Adam Silver, who runs a league of billionaires? Like, what systematic change would you ask for?
Well, me, I'll start with equal justice. I think it should be the same punishment for if I committed murder or if I committed a crime, the police should suffer the same penalty. And it's a lot of policies that's not in our favor. It's a lot of policies that's not in our favor. That's why police feel so comfortable. And just the same thing that the guy had when he had his knee on my brother's neck, the look of comfort and the look that they know they protected. The policies protect them, and that's why they do these things. If we get some policy change and we get equal justice, I think then a lot of things start changing.
Stephen, let me ask you how it was for you once the four officers involved were charged.
I mean, it really didn't do anything to me, Ernie. I've seen so many of these situations where guys get arrested and they get off. You know, I really think if they want to have some change in this world, as you see, this is the first time we've seen all 50 states protest at one time. I'm glad I had a hand in that. You know, since our president is going to lead the right way, I'm willing to lead by love. At the same time, they have to make an example out of these four guys, for Freddie Gray, for Orlando Castillo, for all these got murdered and dealt with police brutality. They need to be an example of these four guys to show people that they are standing with us and they're on the side of right and not on the side of wrong.
Stephen, my question to you. Shaq, you want to go or you want me to go?
Hey, Stephen, I like the point you made yesterday on Instagram. Show them getting arrested like you show us getting arrested when you come looking for child support money. Could you let America know what you said in case they didn't see it?
Yeah, you know, most of the time when we get arrested for tickets or being wanted for high probation or the SWAT team, they kick the door down, they embarrass you. You got to take that walk of shame from your whole neighborhood. Why we didn't see any public arrest when my brother was a world complete? We should have seen this public arrest. They should have had to walk that same walk of shame. And that's what I mean about equal justice.
You know, Stephen, I want to ask you this question, and it's when was the first time you realized that was your brother on the ground?
That's funny you ask that, Charles. I was sleeping on the couch with my daughter, and me and my girlfriend's mom talked about police brutality all the time, so she sent me videos all the time. So she saw me video, and I looked like, oh, it's another brother. They didn't got another brother. And I kind of dozed back off. My phone started kept vibrating back to back to back. And I look at the phone from my friend Mike D, and it said, you see how they did your twin in Minnesota. And I instantly put them two together, the video from my mama, and I put it together, and I just screamed and started knocking stuff down. And it was hard to see because as a black man, not only do we look alike, but I see myself down there. All it takes is a cop to pull me over that don't like me being successful, and that could have easily been me. So the fact that it's my brother, the fact that I'm willing to stand up in this honor, it just fell in my lap, but I'm embracing this role, and I'm glad I can stand for him.
We're going to close with Mark. Look, Mark, as a business leader and as a white man, what is your plan of action? When you look at the problem that is obvious here, what is job one?
Well, job one, I think, is to push so that there's zero tolerance in police forces. I mean, this guy who killed Mr. Floyd wasn't his first act of violence, you know, and so we need to get to zero tolerance, and pushing for legislation that gets there is certainly part of job one. As a business person, going out into the minority community and providing support, you know, we've been working to provide economic support for some of the businesses that in the minority community that have been looted, helping them get loans, helping them get, you know, the education that they need. you know, just working. And then a bigger part of it is having these kind of conversations. Because, look, it took me a while to figure out exactly, you know, what people like Steven and you guys are feeling and the threat that you're continuously under. It wasn't natural for me to know, right? I always thought that just treating people, just being colorblind was the goal, and it's not, right? The goal has got to be much more than that. It's got to be providing support. It's got to be understanding the position, the plight of, you know, African Americans, and it's got to be finding ways to not lift them up, but for the white community to understand better what it takes to be Black in America. And it was hard for me to get here, and I have a long way to go, but if I can get here, I can help others get here.
Mark Cuban and Stephen Jackson, thank you so much for joining us tonight. We appreciate your input and your perspective. Shaq, your closing thought.
Well, a time of turbulence is a dangerous time, but it's the greatest danger is in temptation to deny what's going on. And, you know, we always say about we need to have a conversation. I think I speak for many people who say, forget conversation, it's time for action now. 400 years we've been having this conversation. Jesse Jackson had this conversation. Al Sharpton, Melissa Farrakhan, RZA Islam have this conversation, but nothing seems to get done. So people need to wake up, listen. The so-called powers of being need to understand and put yourselves in our shoes, and let's get something done. Because how many times have we had this conversation?
Kenny?
Well, I'll say that, you know, I've said pretty much what I felt I wanted to get off my chest today, but I also want to shout out, and I want people to pay attention to people who have our voice on a daily basis on this subject. People like Charlamagne Tha God, people like Angela Rye, Van Jones, Don Lemon, and also shout out to Robert F. Smith, who, you know, creates innovative ways to think of innovative economic empowerment for Black people. Those are the people who are talking about it on a daily basis. We talk about sports. Pay attention to those people because they do speak what we're talking about.
Charles?
You know, Ernie, you know, we do a podcast together, and you had a great shirt on one day. You said, be a better human. We got to be better humans. I don't care if you worry about the young brother in Atlanta who got killed for jogging. That's 100% wrong. That cannot happen. And watching Mr. Floyd die, if that did not disturb you, is something wrong with you as a man or as a person. I saw a man die that cannot happen under any circumstances.
If I agree on that last point, if we are unmoved by what we've seen, then we are destined to repeat this. Do whatever it is that you feel you must do. Start a conversation, start a dialogue, take the right steps. Because we don't want to have these conversations, but we'll have them when we need to. Good night.